So do you ever have dessert first? Every dessert first? The word dessert popped up in France around the 1500s, and it means and meant at the time something about clearing the table off, which makes sense, right? Because, you know, you clear the meal off, and then the end would be the dessert. You know, dessert's what happens at the end. But there's something magical about eating your dessert first. I know this from a lot of firsthand experience. It's a tremendous thing. And, you know, the old worldwide interweb has all kind of benefits that it offers for eating your dessert first. Here's a few. It could create a pleasant mood for the rest of your meal. It could stabilize your blood sugar levels. It could cleanse the palate. It could help digestion. And it could reduce overeating. Now, notice I said could in front of all of those. I'm not saying that your doctor is going to tell you for the new year to start eating your dessert first. In fact, he may tell you not to eat dessert at all. That's a possible thing. I know many people are trying to have some New Year's resolutions. You're like, come on, man, I was going to try to cut back on desserts, and here you throw it in my face first thing on Sunday morning. Well, let me just encourage you, if that's one of your resolutions. It's been almost 4 years ago now. My doctor didn't tell me to or order me to, but I pretty much cut out pretty dramatically sugar and desserts. In fact, most days, right now I just have a little bit of honey, most of the sugar that I get. And then also, I also have every Wednesday night after church, that's pretty specific, I have a scoop of ice cream. I do. I go around the corner up here to Manny's right here in West Columbia when church is over, and I go get ice cream. So if you're talking to me a long time after church on Sunday and I don't talk long to you, I'm going to get ice cream, you know. I'll stay with you as long as I can, but I got to get over there to get that ice cream before I go home. Now, the holidays have been a little bit different. My schedule's been a little changed because of holiday plans and family travel and holiday travel. So actually, over the last 6 weeks, I ended up having my scoop of ice cream every week first before my meal four times over the last 6 weeks. I had my dessert first, and it was fantastic. And I don't know why, but I just feel the need to give a shout out to those four places. Off Tracks in Charleston, South Carolina. Gilbert's Ice Cream in Pawleys Island. Sweet Cream Company right here in Columbia. And the Golden Cow Creamery in Charlotte. I mean, I've got around to the Carolinas to have ice cream. I just wanted y'all to know this. This isn't a small thing. I confess that I did not just have one scoop, as I normally do a week. At all of those places, I got more than one scoop, especially in Charlotte, because it was maple sea salt, maybe the best ice cream I've ever had in my life. It was phenomenal. But even though I had an extra scoop, I still, to this day, have a lot of self-control. If you didn't get that, it's okay. What if the most satisfying dessert, though, doesn't come in an ice cream cone? It doesn't come in a pie plate. It doesn't come from a cake server. What if the most satisfying dessert is something completely different? It's almost like honey for your soul. It's something that in any moment, the best and worst of times, can make your heart feel sweet and safe and saved, overwhelmingly sweet and safe and saved. Our sermon today is called A Better Beginning, and we're going to be looking in the Old Testament in Ecclesiastes. And what we will find there in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 is a first dessert that is not just good before the meal, it's good during the meal, and it's good at the end of the meal. It's covers every single moment of life. What kind of dessert is that? Well, let's find out. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 8, King Solomon writes this: "The end of a matter is better than its beginning." One of the wisest and wealthiest kings in history said that the better beginning is the end. The end is better. What does that mean? I was driving through the country a few days ago and came across a cotton field that had already been harvested. And there was this one little line. It was about 3 inches long and maybe about 5 or 6 feet long, 3 inches wide, 5 or 6 feet long. And the combine, for whatever reason, it missed it. Like everything in this huge field was gone except for this little thin sliver of a wall of cotton. But you could see that cotton was there and you knew, oh, okay, this was a cotton field and I can see by that little thin wall. It showed me that there was cotton in that field. But 6 months ago, at the beginning, there wasn't cotton there. See, at the beginning, that wasn't the best part. The best part was the end, the harvest, because then you see the cotton. The end of the crop is better than the beginning. The same is true for us as human beings. I'm in this interesting season in the life of my kids where they're not toddlers or teenagers anymore. They really are young adults. They're out on their own, becoming who they are. And to be honest, to me, it's more exciting than when they were toddlers and teenagers. It's also a little more nerve-wracking for me than it was when they were toddlers and teenagers. But you know, the real marker of what my kids are going to become will be at their funeral. Yeah, it sounds morbid, right? But you know what? It's true. It's true for them, it's true for me, and it's true for you. See, the end will show who we are, who we really are. So the question on this new year is not just, hey, what's my new year's resolution? But the question is, will the end of your life show that you are better than the beginning? And an answer to that question really does matter. John Bloom is a board member of an international Christian ministry. He said this about the beginning of things. At a beginning, when we're looking ahead, we envision a possible future, not a real one. And our vision is always some mixed bag of good and bad motives, love and selfish ambition, serving Jesus and serving others. But looking back, we see reality with greater clarity how various factors affected what we began. In other words, endings are usually more truthful than beginnings. And then he says this, a review of the day in the evening is more truthful than the caffeinated optimism of the morning's good intentions. That's good, because we all have some caffeinated optimism in the morning, right? At the beginning of a new year, we have some caffeinated optimism. We have New Year's resolutions. We have these good intentions. But those intentions are not just designed for January, right? The goal is that they would make it to the end of the year, that the end of the year would be better than the beginning. That philosophy can be seen pretty clearly in the old fable of the hare and the tortoise, the rabbit and the turtle. You may be familiar with it. If not, it's always good to hear again. The hare was making fun of the tortoise because he was so slow. And the tortoise said, well, hey, why don't we have a race? Well, that amused the hare. Sure, all right, let's do that. So the fox came and marked out the distance of the race, started the starting line and the finish line, and he had the hare and the tortoise get to the starting line, and the fox started the race, and the hare took off. And in just moments, he was out of sight of that slow tortoise. And then a few moments more, and he was really gone. In fact, he knew he was so far ahead that he said, you know what, I'm tired, I think I'm just going to take a nap. I've got plenty of time. That tortoise is probably still back there at the starting line. He's only 2 or 3 steps away from where we started. So he took a nap. And the tortoise just kept going, slow and steady, just kept going and kept going. And after a while, showed up where the hare was taking a nap. And the tortoise just kept going, slow and steady, just kept going. Well, after a while, the hare woke up, said, all right, I got to get back on this thing. I'm just going to run to the end. And as he got close to the end, what to his wondering eyes did appear but the tortoise, just a step away from the finish line. And he stepped over, and he won. The end of the race is better and more important than the beginning. The end matters. The end is better than the beginning because it reveals the truth. What is the truth of how you are running in life right now? What's the truth of how you're living in life right now? What's the truth that you're building your life on? One day Jesus was teaching a crowd of people. There were mostly his disciples, some others. But he was teaching his disciples. And he said this, "Everyone who comes to me and hears my words and acts on them, I will show you whom he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug deep and laid a foundation on the rock. And when there was a flood, the river burst against that house, and yet it could not shake it because it had been built. It had been well built." Jesus telling this story, this teaching moment in John chapter 6, and he tells this moment that's good for us right now as we begin 2026. See, Jesus gives us a very simple way to evaluate our lives. In very simple language, he says the person that comes to him, that hears him, and obeys him is the one who is truly following him. And he takes that simple truth and he paints it for us in a picture of two men building two houses. Just using the language that Jesus uses here, we have two men, two houses, but one storm, one flood. And the first man, he goes out to build his house and he said, "Man, I need to dig some good foundations. I need to dig deep," is how Jesus described him. He knew that he wanted a nice house, but he knew the foundations were important. And the foundations were work. He was going to have to do some hard work at the beginning to make sure that the bottom part was good, that the foundation was real. Have you ever seen them doing a bridge construction over a river like on the interstate? I'm always fascinated because they have to put those huge pylons in. I was reading years ago now, in fact, I may have shared this with you before, a 2010 report from the Minnesota Department of Transportation about how those big pile drivers work and what they do in putting those big pylons in the river for the bridge. And this is what it says. "To create a foundation for a bridge, construction crews typically drive piles into the ground, hammering each pile to a depth at which the friction between its surface and the surrounding soil will create enough grip to bear the load above it." So they dig deep to get a good grip so it will bear the load. Now, I'm pretty sure the Minnesota Department of Transportation didn't realize that they were also describing the Christian life as well. We dig deep into God's truth so that we can get a grip on God's power and love so that we can bear up in all of the trials and troubles and tragedies of life because of God's grace around us. The first man, he built his house with a good rule of thumb. Dig, grip, bear. He knew what he was doing. And how do we know that it was the right plan? Well, Jesus says a flood came, a storm came, slammed up against his house, but the house didn't fold. The house held. It was steady, it was stable, and it survived that storm. Why? Because of the foundation. The house survived because of the foundation. The foundation is critical. The person who comes to Jesus, listens to Jesus, obeys Jesus, digs down deep and grabs hold of Jesus. And why? Why should we do that? Apostle Paul said this in Philippians 3, verse 12, "I press on if I may also take hold of that for which I was even taken hold of by Christ Jesus." I think the King James Version there says that I was apprehended by Jesus. See, part of the reason as we begin a new year and even hopefully last year and later in this year and at the end of this year, that we as professing Christians do everything we can to grab hold and take hold of Jesus is because we are doing it fueled by the reality that Jesus has already taken hold of us. We dig down, we grip, we hang on to Jesus because we realize that without him, we have nothing, and with him, we have everything. Because Jesus has taken hold of you. You take hold of Jesus, and you make him the foundation, first and most and greatest, for your family, for your friends, for your relationships with anybody else, for your job, for your education, for your finances, for your holidays, for your new year. And when we do that, when we are taking hold of Jesus because Jesus has taken hold of us, when the storm comes, when the water slams up against our life through those trials and troubles and tragedies, we are able to bear up. We're able to hang on. Because the reality is, we are not our foundation. But Jesus, the solid rock, is actually the foundation holding us together. The end is better than the beginning, especially with Jesus, because of what he has done, of what he is doing, and what he will do forever. That's the first house and the first man. What about the second house? Jesus says this. John 6:49, but the one who has heard and has not acted accordingly is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation, and the river burst against it, and it immediately collapsed, and the ruin of that house was great. The second man, he didn't dig down deep. He didn't want to waste that time. He knew that was work, that was effort. It was going to take longer for him to move in. He was just ready to get there. He didn't want to have to take that time. So he put more probably into the house itself. You know, heated tiles in the bathroom, you know, ice machine that makes pellet ice. You know, he was putting everything into the house. You know, all the stuff that he wanted. All the things that he saw at the, you know, home expo. Oh, yeah, let's put this in the house. He did all the things. And all of them, according to Jesus, were destroyed. Everything was wiped away. Same storm, same flood, different houses, different results. The man did not dig down deep. He also did not dig down deep, as Jesus is telling this parable, with his heart and his mind and his soul and his strength. Jesus was not his foundation. And when the floods and trials and troubles and tragedies of life came, he got washed away. J.C. Ryle said this, the Christianity which consists of merely hearing religion taught without doing anything is a building which must finally fall. I've just been driving around in the country in some of these places that we've had to travel to in the last few weeks, and it's amazing some of these roads I've been on, you know, over the last 50 years, and it's amazing some of the old farmhouses that are still standing there. And then there's a few places that are no longer standing. Over time, those houses, those cinder block, you know, general store buildings out in the corner in the country, they've fallen. They're not there anymore. I heard a sermon one time, and the pastor was just talking about, you know, getting your name on a building. And he just described it. I'll just use myself. He goes, you know, if Dow Welsh works at some company and he retires and they name the building the Dow Welsh building, he said the reality is, he said 30 years from now, there's a good chance nobody that works there is going to know who Dow Welsh is. And when Dow Welsh leaves, somebody else is going to come take his job. And maybe 30 years from now, 35 years from now, that building might be torn down to put up new apartments like every other building that's torn down in South Carolina. A building which is not truly built on Christ, Ralph says, must finally fall. So, which house are you really living in? Which house is yours? Jesus very kindly and graciously is drawing a very simple line in the sand. And he's saying, the way that you know that you're following me, the way that you know that you're not just saying, Lord, Lord, but I am your Lord, boils down to one simple thing. What happens to your house when the storm comes? What happens when the storm comes? Look, the second man wasn't lazy. He wasn't. He built a nice house. He had house plans. They were just the wrong plans. They weren't the plans that were going to last. They weren't the plans with a good foundation. There are a lot of people in the world like the second man. Jeff Thomas pastored the same church for more than 50 years in Wales. He said this: they've made plans for the last years of their lives. They've organized their pensions and invested their savings as wisely as they could. They have carefully prepared a will. They have checked into nursing homes for the partner that is left if he or she is no longer able to take care of himself or herself. They've worked out the cost and downsized their homes. But what of death itself and the vast eternity beyond? On what foundation are they standing as they look at the last things, especially meeting with God? See, we forget at the beginning of the year, we go, oh man, I've got this whole year ahead of me. But we have no idea if we have this whole day ahead of us. And that's not a scare tactic or a guilt trip. It's a joy trip. It's a joy tactic. Because wouldn't it be great that today you're living this new year no different than last year? That on May 1st, you're just as excited as January 1st. That there's nothing mystical or magical about the first day, like you're the hare running the race in January, but man, you're happy to be the tortoise. I'm going to be slow, I'm going to be steady, because I have the one who has vanquished my sin with me. And that won't change on any day. And the ball will drop and that won't change. And the ball will rise and that won't change. For me to have my sins vanquished in Jesus can never be taken away from me. That is the best resolution and intention we could ever build our life on. There's an old song with some Max Aura that puts it like this: the soul that on Jesus has leaned for repose, I will not desert to its foes. That soul, though all hell should endeavor to shake, and we all know there are some days hell endeavors to shake us. That soul, though all hell should endeavor to shake, I'll never forsake. Dig down deep into that reality. Get your best grip on that reality. Learn to bear up under everything because of that reality. Jesus cannot and Jesus will not forsake his own. Look, I started my first kettlebell workout a couple weeks ago, right? Bought me a kettlebell on a random Thursday night before New Year's. I was like, all right, here we go. I'm going to do it. So I've done it for a couple weeks, and it hurts, and I hate it, but you know, I'm doing it. And on New Year's Day, I started my chair yoga routine and my new Bible reading. So I'm doing all the things. And you know, by God's grace, I do not live above Off Tracks ice cream in Charleston, South Carolina. That's just grace for this new year for me. So I'm heading into this year with some good intentions, some resolutions. Hey, come on, let's go get them. But I can tell you this. If any of my intentions get off track, if any of my resolutions get off track, if I don't hold up my end of the bargain, Jesus will always be holding me. There's nothing that can change that, no matter how much I fail. Whether I lose weight, lose muscle, gain muscle, there's nothing that can take away the reality that the one who has vanquished sin through his crucifixion and resurrection is holding me. Do you have that confidence today? Is that the foundation of who you are? I have built and I am building on that reality because Jesus made an everlasting resolution. He made an everlasting resolution that one day he will make my weak goofy faith at times. Sight. He made that resolution. He guaranteed that resolution with his crucifixion and his resurrection. And what Jesus is holding for me, and as I hold on to him, that's the only thing that will matter at my funeral. And it's the only thing that will matter at the end of this day. And it's the only thing that will matter at the end of this year. The end is better than the beginning, because Jesus has made a resolution in the end to never forsake his own. And dear friend, Jesus, unlike us, never breaks his resolutions. The end is better than the beginning because of Jesus.